Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On Talk Sport.
You're listening to the Fight Night podcast with me, Gareth Davies. My guest this week in the studio is the one and only Spencer the Omen Oliver. First of all, we talk about the big news of the week. Ryan Garcia, after that triumphant victory against Devin Haney, 11 days later, a positive drugs test taken just before he fought his opponent. Listen to this. Ryan Garcia this week. What a story, what a soap opera that's becoming. It's still massive news. The news broke this week. Very serious news for Ryan Garcia as Spencer chokes on his coffee. How do you choke on coffee? Spencer will show you. Watch the live YouTube stream because he'll show you. Rewind
the coffee
it.
Got me out of trouble, actually. I choked on my own saliva.
But you also choked, as I said. Ryan Garcia denies steroid use.
That's why I choked as well.
Exactly. That's why I thought you were acting.
You know how I feel about this.
Well, I do, and I'm going to come to that.
I'm strong, baby.
Let me run through it. On the 19th and 20th of April, testing by the Voluntary Anti-Doping Agency in the United States found Osterin in his system both on this Friday and the Saturday of weigh-in day and the fight day, and another substance,
a performance-enhancing drug.
They're all performance-enhanced drugs, but third type of testosterone that they found in his system that hasn't been verified yet. He's requested the B sample. He's been vehement this week that he's innocent. There are conspiracy theories that was he spiked late in the process. I know you're shaking your head. The WBC confirmed it had received notice from VADA that Garcia had returned adverse findings. ESPN first reported that they through a letter they'd obtained from VADA. And Osterin, by the way, is a muscle mass helper, assister, mm-hmm. But obviously it's used in cancer, breast cancer care for women, treatment mm-hmm. for women, because it regrows tissue. Allegedly at the time, it was before the fight, the day before and the day of the fight. Everybody knows that I don't cheat, Garcia, who's 25, wrote on Twitter first this week, or X, and then had a series of videos on Instagram proclaiming his innocence. He's got 10 days to request the B sample. He's done it already, he says. What's your overarching take on this? Because it's a real stain on the triumphalism that we had for him for almost 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Listen, we got far too much of it going on in the sport right now. And listen, my thoughts on it is, if you're going to do it and you get caught, hold your hands up and just own it. Because everyone that does it and everyone that gets caught says, well, I don't understand it. I don't know how it's got there. You know, you do understand it. You do know how it's got there. Like, it's in your system. Like, it's called strict liability. You have to prove why it's in there. You can't just say, I don't know how this is done. It must have been through a supplement. Must have been through this and that. No. It's not. You failed the test and they go, they're waiting for the B sample. Well, guess what? The B sample is half of the A sample. So it's going to come back the same. And so, you know, he's going to have to now prove how this stuff got in his system. I don't like it. And I think that it stinks, you know, and I think that, and you know how strong I feel about this, Gareth. Yeah, I think that we are in an industry, right? It was 26 years ago. middle of the week that I nearly lost my life in a ring. I'm celebrating my 26th year surviving that injury, life-threatening injury that you was at. You covered that around that time.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, you know that I know the dangers of this sport. And I go, I just want a level playing field. I still love the sport. I'm still very passionate about it, but I cannot stand cheats. Because what you're doing effectively is you're putting someone's life at risk. And that person's got families. They've got history. You know, they've got people that care about them. And I just go, I'm looking at it and going, it's an absolute disgrace. They shouldn't be getting a 12-month ban or a two-year ban. They should be slung out for life. And that's what it is. If it's proven that they are guilty for taking a performance-enhancing drug, throw the book at them, sling them out for life, because I think it's a disgrace. Yeah. I think we've got too much of it going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's been very public this week. He's been very vocal, Ryan Garcia. He turned up at the Saul Canelo Alvarez fight in Las Vegas, obviously, yesterday. I do like that he hasn't hidden away, that Golden Boy have put out statements saying that they are going to investigate any supplements that he's been taking. There is talk, I mean, in his defense, I don't disagree with you,
sure,
but in his defense, and he's saying, I'm innocent, I've never taken a steroid, they are going to examine everything that he's taken in the last few weeks.
Of course he's entitled to the process. I totally get that. Sorry to jump in on you because I'm quite passionate about it. But of course that process is now entitled to. But, you know, I just think that right now, I don't agree with
But that. It has been a big soap opera all week. And even to today where Jake Paul was jumping in. Let's hear from Ryan Garcia now. I say he joined YouTuber Jake Paul on Instagram Live today. But there was a degree of jinxism and pranksism in all this. Take a listen to this.
Did you do your B sample already?
I just requested it.
Yeah, because people were saying, they said that you, like, wanted to speed up the process and do the B sample, like, faster.
Bro, I want the B. Bro, I was like, bro, I'll put it in the cup right now. Doc, shit. I don't do steroids, bro. Like, can somebody help me out here, bro? I don't do steroids.
It's just tough when you pop.
Bro, all I do is black coffee.
But like, if the test is saying that you did, then like, how do you?
There's only one way. If all my tests came out clean, all the way up to what was that day before my fight, and the day after, obviously they're setting me up, bro. Bro, I don't take steroids, dog. But because I won, they threw this shit on me, bro. I don't do steroids. Like, that's weird, bro. I've never done steroids in my life.
But Ryan, if you did do it, then that's really fucked up, bro. And I'm
bro, I didn't off. Do it, bro.
I'm gonna be pissed off at you,
bro,
as a friend.
I'll punch
and, like,
myself
that's
in the face up, right now, bro. I'll punch myself in the face.
If you did though,
I did it, bro, which I know damn well I didn't, I would have quit boxing, bro. I didn't do it, bro. I didn't do it.
Well, Ryan Garcia, fascinating back and forth there, and Jake Paul admonishing his friend if he has taken steroids deliberately. Obviously, would admonish him. Any of us wouldn't. As Spencer rightly pointed out then, it's heinous. It really is a heinous. It's a crime in our sport. What I want to clarify there, what Ryan Garcia misunderstood was you can't do a B sample now by pissing into a bottle or peeing into a bottle. It was a urine test. You can see that clearly on the letter that did the rounds. The B sample is taken from the A sample. The sample is split in half. The B sample is always the same as the A sample. It's just, cut in half and restored and retained rather, so that it can be brought to the fore. Now, the problem for Ryan Garcia, Spence, is that I cannot remember the last time a B sample came back and didn't show the same as an A sample. He's going to do it. He sounds very convincing to me as well.
They all do. I mean, why wouldn't he? You know, because he's in denial right now. You know, he's got to defend himself by saying, listen, I can't believe this. I don't know how it's got into my system. Well, it's there. It's about you trying to prove how it got there. You know, that's down to you, and only you can do that. So by just saying, I don't know how it got there, is not good enough.
Up next, Frank Warren joined us. Obviously, we've got Tyson Fury against Alexander Usyk coming up in a couple of weeks' time. We will all be heading out there, of course, to cover it for TalkSport. It's a fantastic, undisputed heavyweight title between two undefeated fighters. Frank spoke at length about what he believes Tyson Fury will do against Alexander Usyk. He also talked to us about the disappointment of the injury to Artur Beterbiev because that undisputed light heavyweight title is now off. Here's Frank.
All three in favor of the winner and the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, Lennox Lewis.
With all these fans coming here to support me, I've got to pull it out. Enough people were trying to stop me. The Americans didn't want me to take it over the Atlantic to Britain, but I actually persevered and succeeded.
The biggest fight of the 21st century taking place. It's never happened before. Four belts on the line, and we're going to find out who the best heavyweight in the world is.
Are all dossers. He's getting knocked out, and you two are going to be working for me, carrying me bag slings. Remember, I said it on the stage.
Let the fight go on. Let's get the
press conference going, Sophie. Let your man talk.
Let the belts come back home to Ukraine.
From Ukraine, Alexander Usyk.
It is unbelievable. I can't emphasise how good he is.
I don't think Fury's boxed anybody like him. A good Alexander Usyk probably holds his own with just about any heavyweight that's ever lived.
If he can't find explosives, he will not beat Tyson Fury. I don't care what they say.
I'm the last undisputed heavyweight champion of the world right now. So in order for one of those guys to have my crown, they have to fight.
Good evening, Ferris.
Good evening, hey, Frank. Good evening.
All good, Spence and Gareth. Very, very excited. As you say, 2 weeks to go. It's gone pretty fast over the last, since he got his cut. But Tyson's really ready for this. He's flown out today, so he arrives there today, so he finished off his camp. And, we're going to get something special on the 18th. I'm convinced of that. He's in tremendous shape, not just physically, but both mentally as well. And I genuinely think we're going to get a vintage performance from him, and I believe he'll bring the four bells back.
Did you speak to him today before he left?
No, I spoke to him in the week. I spoke with one of the team, Spencer.
Spencer Brown is manager, yeah.
Spencer's gone out today. So, yeah, everybody's good. He's in a really good place, as I said. And although he got that cut, I think out of bad has come good because he's had more or less back-to-back camps. And he's, as I say, physically, I've never seen him look so well.
Yeah, a lot of even his critics, I would say, you know, the likes of Tony Bellew, I was listening to him this week with Carl Froch. I mean, a lot of people within the sport are backing Alexander Usyk to win, talking about him technically. I mean, you know my feelings. I think Tyson Fury is the number one heavyweight in the world. I still think there's going to be a really weird, cagey chess match, and it could be. I've gone for controversial draw, which I don't know. We'll just play into the remit of things. Obviously, you want Fury to beat Usyk, but in your time in boxing, I mean, obviously, that Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield doubleheader was an amazing moment. In your time in the sport, given the Saudi Arabian investment now, given what's happening all the time, given the movement within the sport, is this the biggest time ever?
Yeah, I generally do think so. I mean, at the moment, you know, the big fights are being made, but it's not just the big fights that everybody's been waiting to see are being made. It's also the rest of the card. I mean, they're mega, mega events, and you've got sort of the undercard. You know, there's lots of fights on there are like main events in their own right. And that investment and the way it's got sort of got everybody's imagination and they're seeing, I just think it's a brilliant time for boxing. I think boxing's in a really good place at the moment, a very, very good place.
It really is, Frank. You know, we've waited since 1999 to get an undisputed world heavyweight title fight, and that's how often they come around. And this is a magnificent fight, really is, isn't it? What sort of condition is Tyson Fury in, and what does he do in preparation, you know, now that he's out there? Is it just a fact of ticking over?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, what the worry was, Spence, was coming out of that other camp, and the fact he was in, you know, he was more or less at the end of his training, certainly was at the end of his sparring, was that after the cut, that going straight in again, that he obviously didn't have to lose a lot of weight or anything, because he was in such condition, was the fact that he would peak too soon. But he's maintained, you know, he's really worked hard on working towards becoming, you know, that he's in his best nick or his best condition on the 18th. And now he's, you know, he's the hard work's been done. The next couple of weeks, you know, he'll just get acclimatised to the, it's quite hot out there at the moment, although it's, I know the fight's indoors, but he'll be acclimatised himself to the conditions out there, and also the time. There's a 3-hour time difference. But I honestly feel he's going to put in a magnificent performance, and I generally do think that he will stop Usyk.
What is it? You say that. Is it going to be a cagey start? Is it going to be a boxing match to begin with? Is it going to be a kind of brutal physical chess? Do you think he's going to be the Fury that fought Wilder the second time then, and you feel he's going to go after him and put it on him?
Well, I think even the first fight he had with Wilder, the fact was that, you know, back then he wasn't at his physical best. He lost weight. He still had weight to lose.
Mm.
But he's changed his style in the second fight. He certainly did. He went out there and he just put it on him. He just went to hunt him down, and he did hunt him down, and he stopped him. He became the first person to do that. And I feel he'd do the same thing here. I just think that physically he looks strong. He's big. They're both great fighters. There's no doubt about that. They're both undefeated. And the pedigree that Usyk's got going back to the Olympics, you know, to be in probably the best, cruiserweight of his generation since he went up to heavyweight, which was about 4 years ago. He's undefeated at heavyweight. He's acclimatized at heavyweight. But having said that, with Usyk, he's in with a guy who's got as good of, if not better, boxing brain than him. And I think he's more powerful, and I think he's more stronger.
Mm.
And I think he's got more. I think he's got more chinks in his armor, Usyk, and Tyson's the guy to exploit that.
Sure, Frank. I think what he needs to do is go out there and impose his physical attributes, doesn't he? He needs to go out there, take the fight to Alexander Usyk, and take that away from him. Because Tyson Fury's great at doing that, isn't he? Like, he's got a great boxing IQ, but he's great at the physicalities, and he knows what he's got to do. And I think that's how he wins a fight. He imposes himself early and takes that away from Usyk.
He also, Frank, but what I think Fury does really well, he knows how to adjust, and that could be key in this fight as well.
Adaptability.
Well, he's very good at exploiting anybody's weaknesses, I mean, mentally and physically. He's very good at that. But having said that, I'm sure, looking at his last fight, Usyk will think that there were some chinks in the armour in the fight he had against Nagano. It wasn't a great performance from Tyson. He did what he had to do to win, but it wasn't his best performance, probably his worst performance I've seen him have as a professional. But, you know, this Tyson Fury is going in there. I mean, he's trained like a demon for this.
Mm.
And he really wants this. As much as he says that, you know, it's about winning, not so much about the belts, this for him is legacy. It's a seriously, you know, it's a serious statement to make, winning those four belts, first time this century. And no one's ever take that away from him. He brings those four belts back to the UK. No one's ever done
seven
that.
Belts, remember, Frank, as we were laughing Morecambe. It's actually seven, isn't it?
Well, one thing's for sure, there's no chance of his trousers falling down. He knows what he's got in front of him, and he's relishing it. He talks about this fight like it's like it's his destiny, you know, that this is what he's worked for. This is what it's all about.
Frank, if he can throw on the cloak of invincibility for victories over Alexander Usyk, and we all want to see him in against Anthony Joshua, does Tyson become one of the greatest heavyweights of all time if he pulls on that cloak, as I say, for two more or three more fights and is victorious over those two fellas?
Well, I've said many times, you know, he's already beat the best heavyweight his generation in Klitschko, in basically in his backyard. He then went to the States and the three fights against Wilder, who at that time, up to the first fight, had never been defeated, was a world champion for 6 years and statistically was the hardest punching heavyweight out there. He beat him. And I think that makes him the best heavyweight of his generation. By beating Usyk, who a lot of people fancy, by the way, as you mentioned, it's a lot of people, including yourself, you think it could be a draw.
I just think it'll be controversial and cagey, Frank. I
don't mean it as a criticism. I'm just saying that there is a division and people think the fight would end. But by beating him, there's no doubt about it then that he is the best heavyweight of his generation, and he goes up there with all the greats. And you remember Usyk, we keep talking about the AJ fight, we want to see it. He's beaten AJ on two occasions. He's beaten him twice. So he's fighting the guy who's beaten AJ twice.
Yeah, it's a fascinating fight.
Frank, a couple of very quick questions before we let you go and enjoy a glass of wine to celebrate your Arsenal winning 2-0 today. Of course, a great goal by Declan Rice. I'm sure you're having a glass celebrating that this evening.
3-0.
Was it 3-0? Spence told him it was 2. Yeah. 3-0, sorry. I do apologise, sir. Beterbiev and Bivol postponed. We touched on it in the first section. You still go ahead with your contest against Eddie Hearn and five amazing fights at all main events anywhere else in the world or on any other card. Disappointment hearing that today that Beterbiev has injured his knee?
Yeah, it is a disappointment. You know, and that happens in boxing. It's the same as Tyson. It's only idiots who were saying Tyson it wasn't happening and it was on purpose and that it happens, and it's happened in quite a few fights over the last few years where, you know, where guys have pulled out with injuries or they've been postponed. everyone's really gutted where we are with this. However, and I mean this with the greatest respect, because both of the light heavyweights, both of them again undefeated records, both 20-0. We're looking forward to it, but everybody's imagination being captured by the 5v5.
Yeah, totally.
They are good fights, and these guys have all are training very hard for it. So the show goes on; it will go on, and it's a fantastic concept, and it'll be a very competitive night of boxing that Queensbury are going to win.
Can I just ask, do you know a date very quickly? Because I've got to ask you one other question. Do you know a date for that postponed light heavyweight undisputed fight or not?
Not at the moment. It depends, you know, we only heard about it late last night. It depends how severe the injury is. And because obviously he can't spar, more or less he can't run. So he stops training altogether. So that's when he can resume training. And no doubt that will be put on as soon as it can be put on, because everybody wants to see that fight.
Frank, very, very, very quickly, and we're going to talk about your new signings in the next section and listen to Nazim Hamid, who was here in the week, saying really nice things about yourself and also Spencer Oliver, and obviously about his son, Adam Nazim Hamid. Chantel Cameron, Nazim Hamid. Adam Nazim Hamid, great additions to the stable this week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. You've got this, you know, with Chantel, obviously she's done everything that's been asked. I think she's in the top two or three women fighters in the world. So she's got a wealth of experience behind her. And she signed with Queensbury, and we're delighted with that. And we're going to give her the pathway for now.
You're fighting for the mandatory, she's saying. Yeah, you're going to fight for those mandatories for her, yeah?
That's where we want to do. We'll move heaven and earth to make that work.
Yeah. You always do.
And we're, you know, and she, as I say, she's, you know, we're delighted she's on with all of us. And on the other sort of other end of the spectrum, you've got young Adam, who's had one professional fight, zero amateur fights. He's been in the gym for quite a few years training. You get all the various reports that you hear about him, but it's a long journey for him. He's got big boots to fill. you know, following his dad, who's a, you know, British boxing legend or a world boxing legend.
Agreed.
And I've got to temper everybody's expectation levels at this stage of the game. I'm not having him pushed. I'm not gonna, and I made it very clear, more to his mum, Alicia, than Naz. And I just said that, you know, you got to let us do what I think we're good at doing, which is to bring him through. He's got to gain experience. He's going to do that by training, but more importantly, by having quite a few fights. I don't want to push him too much because he's, as I say, he's not had any amateur experience, but getting the fights so he learns his craft and his trade, so we can prepare him when he hopefully gets into a stage where he can fight for world titles. And then I said to him, if you do 20% of what your dad did, you'll be a really, really good fighter. So
absolutely.
Let's see how we go with it. But I'm really looking forward. He's a really nice boy. He's a credit to Naz and Alicia, and he's a welcome addition. People are going to like him.
Absolutely.
He's a really nice young man.
Frank, we're going to let you go. Will you join us next week, by the way, when we begin our build-up, a big build-up to Fury and Usyk, because you're packing your case. No doubt you're leaving Sunday morning like we are. Can we speak to you next week as well and talk Fury and Usyk?
Yeah, not a problem. We've got a show on at York Hall. We've got Dignam in with Denzel Bentley. So,
oh, yeah, nice. Yeah, great fight.
Cracking little fight that is, but yeah, absolutely. We're a pleasure to be on here, and another week gone, and we'll be out there, and it's going to be a very, very exciting fight week. There's no doubt about that, and some really good fights on the undercard involving some British fighters as well. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we were joined by another great studio guest in rising cruiserweight prospect John James Hedges from the Traveller Community. Essex boy that he is. We had a rollicking time in the studio with him, talking about the cruiserweight division, his future, his modelling, his looks. Take a listen to this.
Eye-catching single shots from Hedges. That left hand down the middle rocks Bartari right back onto his heel. Senses that Hedges maybe is waning. He will press on. And down goes Robert Bartari.
The winner by knockout. He's still undefeated. The gentleman, John J. Hedges.
Well, that was the voice, I believe, of Michael Buffer saying James Hedges?
John James Hedges.
John James Hedges. Look, you're a big, handsome fella. We just had a photo just then in front of the Talk Sport sign. You are a blooming heavyweight, not a cruiserweight. Do you have to cut a lot of weight to make cruiser?
Well, believe it or not, it wasn't that long ago I was a light heavyweight. So I've only just moved up, but I say just moved up. People say you have to grow into the weight. I was always walking around 100 kilo. If not a bit more.
Are you a rugby guy?
No, hate rugby.
What did you do before boxing then?
To be honest with you, I played a little bit of football, but...
In goal?
No, I was a defender, centre-back.
Okay.
Big old lump at the back with me head, do you know what I mean? but I come from a fighting family. Me dad used to box, me brother boxed.
Tell us about them.
So, my background was Repton Boxing Club. Started there as a kid. That's where my fundamentals come from. Like, if people look at me, they always say you've got good footwork. And very, like, my reactions have always been good. And that's all from Repton Boxing Club. I can't...
One of the great amateur boxing clubs in our country, by the way. You know, Darren Barker, his brother, obviously late brother, say a prayer there. Yeah. I think so many great names have come out of there.
It's a brilliant club. And like you say, when you look around the walls of Repton Boxing Club, the amount of great fighters that have been in there is unbelievable.
So you've been destined for this as a calling, then?
1,000,000%. I've got to say hats off to my dad. He used to drive me to Repton from the age of 8 years old. We're from Stansted Airport, so he'd drive me down to Bethnal Green.
What, do you live on the airport?
We're literally a village next by. Takeley.
Oh, you're in Takeley?
Yeah.
Man, you're in the wilds there.
Hatfield Forest.
In the wilds there. People fight in the streets there all the time. That pub on the corner on the crossroads.
There's no excitement.
How do you know it so well anyway? Because I live near there, and
I
tell you what, I fear breaking down in Takeley late at night.
Gareth, are you serious?
No, I'm kidding. Of course I'm kidding. I know the error. I'm one of us. I'm an old Fessex boy these days, you know. I've got to get my teeth done. I need the implants done and all that stuff.
You've got the tan?
I've got the tan.
Yeah, you have got the tan. You're there.
So... Growing up in that area, it's a big football area, Tottenham, West Ham, Arsenal fans. Did Dad take you down to Repton at like 6 and that was it? You were addicted or what?
So more than anything, my brother used to box, Swaley. I followed his footsteps. He used to take me down the gym all the time, down West Ham Boxing Club, my brother was. And I hated it, Gareth. It weren't a bit of me. Like, I just...
Did you throw water on yourself and pretend you'd been training and
that
stuff?
That sort of stuff. I was a fat kid. I didn't care about the fighting side. I just wanted to be part of it. I wanted to wear the tracksuit and look part of it. Mm. And then over time, it was just West Ham. West Ham was a very... Mickey May, a great trainer.
Yeah.
But it was hard. If you was 10 years old, you was training like a 30-year-old man. And that was the thing that used to scare me to death when you was a kid. So my dad said, right, I want to give me a second chance of liking the sports. So he took me to Repton. And then the first day I walked into Repton Gym, that was a bit of me. It weren't a fighters club. It was a boxers club. It was everything I liked, really. So fell in love with the sport. And from there, Gareth, never looked back, to be honest with you.
John, you've always been very naturally talented, though, mate. Like, so I remember you through the amateurs, followed your career as an amateur, saw you box live as an amateur as well. Always very, very tall for the weight. I think he was a middleweight even when I saw you as an amateur, like 6'5" middleweight. Yeah. It was like phenomenal. But you'd won everything. You'd done everything. And sort of like, you know, it was big things always going to be expected from you, as a professional. And you sort of going on and you're 9 unbeaten now, 3 of them inside the distance, and you're moving on and you're moving through the weights and all. And you're like, can you believe 2020, Gareth, this guy was a super middleweight when he had his debut. Now up at cruiserweight, and you're going to probably grow into a full-grown heavyweight, without a doubt.
A million percent. Like, the heavyweight division is where I see myself campaigning at 25, 26. I'm 22, just turned now, so...
It's a thrilling division at the moment. Is the cruiserweight division. We're going to come to that in a bit. But what weight did Dad fight in?
So my dad, when he was another fat boy, Gareth. He was like myself at the start. he only had about 10 fights as an amateur.
He's 6 foot tall, is he?
He's 6'1". My dad's brother, same, but they're very wide.
Yes.
So that's where I'm now. Big guys, I'm trying to fill out. I was always, like Spencer said there, always lean, tall. Mm. But now I've started to get a bit of weight behind me and get a bit of maturity.
John, when you turned professional, how much of a shock was that for you? Like, you had your professional debut. You won that one really well. Going into your second fight, going in there against a guy, and you found out what that game was all about, because you're going, like I say to you, expectations really high. John Hedges is going to go all the way. And it's easy to lose yourself when you're wrapped up in all that. You come up against a guy, tough journeyman, and all of a sudden you find yourself in that fight. It was a massive learning fight for you, weren't it? It was one of them ones where that probably moulded you as a fighter you are today.
Exactly what you just said there, Spence. Like, I kind of needed that. I walked, like I say, it was my debut where I found it straight away. I walked in, made championship weight suit of middle. Why I done it, I'll never know, but you live to learn sort of thing. I just thought, if I walk in there 6'6", super middleweight, who's done that? And I thought, I shocked the public. And it was a great talking point, but I don't think I left enough in the tank, if I'm honest with you.
We lose all the punch resistance.
And exactly that. I got away with that in the amateurs. We're in the pro game now. I went against a great fighter. And he, like I say, he weren't a journeyman, my first opponent. He had a good record and a good winning record. Mm. And he was southpaw. And I remember getting in there. It was a late change of opponent. There was a lot of politics behind it, but we're fighters, aren't we? We're not going to turn down a fight. And, I remember saying to Eddie after that fight, I said, Ed, that was not me. I said, let me come back at light heavy, I promise you. Because I thought I might have blown my chance. Cause I know when you're gutted in yourself, I thought I can give 10 times more than what I just showed there.
You're addicted to the sport, clearly. Yeah. You love it. It's your lifeblood. What have you done? You're still a very young man, but what have you done in the background? Have you got a trade? Did you leave school early? What was your journey? What was your route? Did you get out of school straight away? What was the route that you took?
Yeah, so to be fair, Gareth, like, I didn't really take the... Because obviously I come from a travelling background. I didn't take the traditional travelling route. I went through school, done everything properly, got me GCSEs, went to college, and then I actually went and done a carpentry apprenticeship.
Yeah, that's what I was fascinated in. Can you make a good cabinet or not?
Absolutely awful. Hence why I took the boxing career up.
I'm glad you said that. He'd have you around his house, mate.
So I need a good carpenter, anyway. I always need a good
local
carpenter.
Boy.
Absolutely. So, and talk to us about the traveller background. Because were you site or house that you grew up?
No, I've always been settled. So we've got our own yard, and I've lived in a house. I was in a trailer when I was a baby, but not what I remember of. Do you know what I mean? So.
But the culture of boxing within the traveller community has changed enormously. It's the national sport of the travellers, isn't it?
Literally.
The society of travellers.
If you go back to the schoolboy level at amateurs, it's only travellers. And you'll know what I mean there, Spence. Yeah. You go to a national final, I'm telling you, 20 out of the 30 boxers are travelling.
John, all the parents are there.
But it was like that. All the parents. It was like that when I was boxing, even in the schoolboys and whatnot. It was all predominantly travellers, all through all the gyms. But they used to fizzle out, like, because they were getting.
That, Spence. Yeah,
that's what used to happen. I think.
Why is that?
Tyson Fury and Billy Joe Saunders changed the tradition. They paved the way, like for professional boxing. And yeah, the odd one that done
and
it,
Andy
but
Lee.
Not
like
that.
Andy Lee.
But yeah, like traditionally, I think they just went off, didn't they? And a lot of them were tree cutters and they used to sport in
families. This is the thing. Well, traditionally, with the travelling background is. You go to work from a young age. So soon, what normally happens, as soon as you get your driving licence, that's your first bit of freedom. And then people can't, not speaking out of turn, but they can't hack it as soon as they get their freedom. And then the boxing is the last thing on their priority. Now they've got their driving licence, they're out, they're getting married at a young age, they're having kids at a young age. So that's half the reason why the great fighters fizzle out. But I think more than anything with me, Gareth and Spencer, like, when I come in, I didn't exactly start off amazing. I was winning fights, but I was never the kid to watch. I weren't this... But then I started seeing all the kids to watch slowly fizzle out. And then that just gave me that bit of eager to move on. And I moved to Hoddesdon Boxing Academy. And like I say, I finished up 44 fights, 40 wins. And I had a real good run in the amateurs. Mm.
Yeah. I think I watched your last amateur fight, actually, before you turned pro.
Do you know which one it was?
Was it the Hoddesdon Home Show?
Yeah, Hoddesdon Home Show.
I was there. Billy Joe was down there and
Billy
all that.
Billy Joe, Tom Little come down. That was a big talked about fight.
That's what I'm saying, because you was boxing this kid, and I'm going, right, I've come down there to see John Hedges, because like, they were all telling me about it, because I know a few of the kids from Hoddesdon, and I thought, I'll come down, see what this kid's all about, and you dealt with him, you've done the job, and I thought, it's going to be a good journey.
I remember from that fight, Tom Little videoed a bit, and was giving it all flashy, looking at the ring as he's doing
it.
And he put it out and he tagged Frank Warren, he tagged Eddie Earn, and I got a bit of, that's how I got involved with Sam Jones, literally from that one Twitter message, and it all blew.
He's always said to me, I've got this diamond, you've got to follow him, and I've been following you ever since. I want to talk to you about the cruiserweight division. We want to talk to you about the cruiserweight division, Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk next, but I've been at Bare Knuckle tonight before I came here at India at the O2. It's living the dream. What I want to know is, have you ever had a fair fight? Have you ever had a bare knuckle fight?
No, Gareth, I'll be honest with you, I've been kept out of that, which I'm very grateful for.
It's changing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's not what it used to be, and I'm not trying to glamorise it. Even back in the day, it's never a good thing to have a bare knuckle fight, especially in the travelling community, but it's one of them things sometimes what you've got to do, but I'm lucky enough to have a good family behind me. They kept me away and kept me clear out of that and kept me clear out of trouble.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
trying to draw the lead out and really fire back with a sharp left hand, either uppercut or straight as he does there. I think Dirk found the body there, and he's letting the hands go, and Nogolski in trouble. Referee says enough.
And still undefeated, the gentleman, John Hedges!
Are you the best looking boxer in Britain?
Well, look, Gareth, all I'm trying to say is I've just done a shoot with Armani, and that just came out yesterday. So
is
I'm
that true?
Yeah, I mean,
that's fantastic.
Going JD Sports at the minute, I just managed to, blagged me way in, didn't I?
Why does he seem so surprised anyway? When
yeah,
he says,
I mean, he told me I'm good looking, and now he's taken away from me.
No, I'm glad you got those kind of sponsors.
Well, look, my management, Harry Phillips, who's here with me today, he said to me, he said, John, look, I've got this opportunity come up, and what an opportunity that was to be in JD. That's a dream come true, do you know what I mean, to see myself in there.
You're 9-0 as a cruiserweight. We've talked about your amateur career. We've talked, Spencer, obviously very well versed in it. Your traveller background. We don't know when you're fighting next. You're a cruiserweight, of course. When are you fighting? When you think you'll be fighting next?
All we know is what we've got penciled in is a Southern Area title shot next. After that last performance, only went 2 rounds. It was meant to be a step-up opponent. I'm in a real good place now, Gareth. So when it comes, it comes. And I'm hoping it's back in our hometown of London.
Listen, you've got a big fight coming up June the 15th. Chris Billingsmith defending his world title. Selhurst Park.
Cruiserweight.
Against Richard Riakpor. Quick question for you before we get into that one. Chris Billingsmith, the gentleman. John Hedges, the gentleman. What happens if you two ever fight?
Well, it's just sells out Selhurst and Wembley.
It's a battle of the gentlemen, is it?
Two nice guys of the sport and... Chris is a gentleman, like, and the way people talk about Chris, they say how good his fighting ability is, and they say how much of a nice man he is, and that's exactly how I want to be presented myself.
You might have to fight him for the world title one day, even though you've sparred and you're friends.
It'd be beautiful to fight Chris. What a fight that would be, and he is a great fighter.
Do you think he retains his WBO cruiserweight crown against Richard Riakpor?
It's a very tough fight. But because of momentum and the way Chris is coming through, I genuinely believe, I think he does. Yeah.
How do you describe that fight to them? Because I see Riakpor as a marginal favourite. They're going to Selhurst Park, 30,000 odd fans in there. It's going to be a great night. First fight at Selhurst Park for 70 odd years. Why do you think Chris can win that fight?
More than anything, activity and momentum. And I believe Riakpor's got one up on Chris, right? So it's that underdog mentality.
Very close fight, though, wasn't
Very
it?
Very close fight, and the underdog mentality. I just think Chris goes in there with that little bit more hunger, and he knows what it feels to be like a world champion now. He's going to want to keep them belts, and that's my opinion on it.
I've got one for you. So Chris Billingsmith has had 10 fights since that fight they had in 2019. He's won all 10, won the world title. Richard Riakpor's got himself into that mandatory position, but had 7 fights, but he's had an easier journey. I mean... Chris Billingsmith in his last couple of fights, I guess, especially against Mateusz Mastanak.
So
against him, he had a tough night, and you could see him, John. You know,
he came
this.
Through a torrid time
yeah,
in
did,
the first five
John,
rounds.
You know, when you're looking at a fighter and you could look into their eyes as the fight is unfolding. He walked back to the corner. I think it was about after the fourth round. I'm looking at him. I'm thinking. He don't look like he's got a lot left here.
You weren't thinking you were doing commentary on it. I said it out loud.
And I'm thinking, I can see as an ex-fighter, you go, I know he's doubting himself here. Shane McGuigan done a great job and picked him up and they turned it around and he got the victory. But when you look at those sort of fights, they put years on you, John, don't they?
That's
why I think Riakpor starts the marginal favourite because he now believes in his own ability. He's got confidence in his own ability. He's matured as a fighter since that last one. And Billingsmith's been through some tough fights, and that may be the difference.
I think what you just said there, Spencer, it can work either way. Yeah. Either you get good experience from it, or you get, not punchy, it's the wrong word, but you know, you get the rough
wear and tear.
The wear and tear, exactly that.
There's also, I think, you have to admire Billingsmith's durability and tenacity, but Riakpor's got that equalising power. That's where I think he's very, very dangerous.
Definitely. He's got that one punch power, which is a very great asset to have in the cruiserweight division.
So if we pose this question to you then, you cast your eye across them all. You'll be targeting all of them. Who's the best cruiserweight in the UK right now then?
In the UK, right. I know who's in the world, but in the UK, I'd have to say, look, personal opinion, Chris Billingsmith. He's got that world title.
Mm-hmm.
He's been active, and he's proved himself. After the Riakpor fight, we're going to really see, aren't we? We're going to see who the main man in Britain is. But Yeah, I think. Look,
you are you not the best cruiserweight in Britain?
No, I've got improvement to do yet. I'm young. I'm a young gun. I will be one day.
Very honest.
Who's the best cruiserweight in the world?
Joao Pitaya, without a shadow.
Why?
Boxing brain, just flair, classy. He reminds me of a throwback fighter with more flair.
How do you get a classy monster? That's what he is.
He's got it all.
Have you spent time around him at all?
Never.
I spent a lot of time with him in Riyadh, about 4 or 5 days in a row anyway, and I met his whole team, had a fantastic time with him. Do you know what I found about him most of all? He's a very silent, icy, cool character.
Yeah, he doesn't waste nothing.
Very retained. Yep. He doesn't waste anything.
Yeah. He's a nice guy, though.
Oh, he's lovely.
Yeah, really nice guy.
He's a proper fighting man as well. You see, he does it for his family. He's got the right setup.
But rarely do you get a monster that has a great boxing IQ as well. And I'll tell you another one. Better be exactly like that.
Yep.
Yeah, where you go, like, they've either got one or the other in it. You're either a fighter or you're a boxer, but you rarely get to combine the two. And that's what Oppetai, that's why he stands
exactly
out.
Exactly what Oppetai done to Zorro, in my opinion. I get there was a...
No, it was Zorro, knocked him clean out. Yeah.
I get there's a big level difference in my opinion. I thought it was a bit of a mismatch going in, not speaking disrespectfully, but even what he done, that we see some fighters nowadays that they take it for granted and it goes 4 or 5 rounds. He timed it.
And he had so much
confidence in that backhand. When he let it go, he knew the result. He walked away before he hit the camera.
We've only got 5 or 6 more minutes with you. I'm going to try and get you to stay with the next section when we listen to Riakpor and Billum Smith as well, if Ed, our producer, allows it. Look at him shaking his head at me. We're enjoying it. No, he's putting his thumbs up. Will you stay with us till 11?
100%.
Okay, good. So let's just get into the cruiserweight heavyweight chat. Bring Oppetaya into that.
Yep.
Because you talked about, I mean, you are a big cruiserweight, so you might step up to heavyweight in your late 20s, early 30s. That's when heavyweights are at their best. Unless you're Mike Tyson, when you look at Jaya Pataya, first of all, could he make it at heavyweight as well?
Physically, I don't actually believe so. He's got their boxing ability too. When I look at Oppetai, I don't think he's a massive cruiserweight.
No, he isn't a big guy.
He's not.
He's 6'1", 6'2".
He's a small, but I compare him a little bit to Usyk in the sense that his boxing ability is great and Usyk's managed to take it up there to the heavyweight.
But he's a big guy, Usyk.
That's what I was about to say. He has got that physicality, which is already bigger. I don't think Jaya Pitaya has. He definitely will rule the cruiserweight division for a number of years. And I'd like to say he makes the weight quite comfortably. I've never asked him, but...
Would you like to become one of those cruiserweights in that pantheon of Usyk, Evander Holyfield, David Haye? Our great friend Johnny Nelson never managed it at heavyweight, but probably should have. But he was one of those kind of very elusive fighters. He dominated the cruiserweight division.
He won the WBF heavyweight
title. Can you do that? Can you take yourself from cruiserweight to heavyweight? Do you dream of world championships?
Most definitely. My eyes are all on the cruiserweight division at the moment, Gareth, but I genuinely believe with age on my side, where I'm at now, I'll win a world title on cruiserweight and move up. But like I say, all eyes on the cruiserweight division.
I'm going to ask you about the 5v5 Hearn versus Warren in a minute, but what about Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk? We've spoken to Frank Warren about it tonight. It's only 2 weeks away now. How do you feel about the fight?
Tyson Fury for me.
Well, of course, Tyson Fury for you. You can't say anything different.
Yeah, I can't.
You get kind of hung, drawn, and quartered if you said Usyk. You might not get hung, drawn, and quartered. I'm metaphorically. Why Fury, though? Why the detail on it?
My main thing is, and it might sound a bit cliche, but a good big man will always beat a good small man. And it goes back to that for me. I think Usyk is a great fighter. Got everything in attributes, and he beats everyone else other than Fury. Mm.
Let's have an argument with Spencer Oliver, because this is a very important one. What does Fury do to Anthony Joshua?
I don't like to say it because I'm with Eddie, but I believe Fury plays with AJ.
What happens with Fury and Joshua, Spencer Oliver?
Styles make fights, and I think that Anthony Joshua right now, with the momentum, the confidence, that confidence that's been missing from his style, the Anthony Joshua of today, right now,
the Cape Crusader says you're a Joshua fanboy. Simon Jordan says you're a Joshua fanboy and you can't do anything different to that.
He's got an opinion. You all have.
What I would say there, though, Gareth, right? The new Joshua, I've not seen him like this for many years.
There you go.
He's a dangerous man.
He's got momentum. There's no question about it. But I think Styles make fights. Where do I sit with it?
It's much closer. You're a Fury fanboy, by the way.
Listen, we're all travellers. That's what it is.
He's joined the community.
I've been doing the community.
It's a great fight, isn't it? Like, yeah. It's a fight that we need to see.
It's the biggest fight in the world.
It's got to happen.
It's the biggest fight in the world.
Yep.
Yeah. You know? Please God it happens. You know, once I think, and I do believe that happens.
Fury's got to beat Usyk first for it to happen.
Fury will beat Usyk.
Yep.
I think it'll be a controversial draw first time, and they'll do a second one.
John, you're so spot on. A good big one will beat a good little one. And the difference is, Usyk would have never boxed anyone with the IQ of Tyson Fury. That's the difference.
And like you just said there, Spence, you can get as many big sparring partners in, southpaw, awkward sparring partners, but no one's got that boxing brain what Tyson Fury has.
Absolutely. Are you coming out with us or not? Because we're out there. Are you coming out?
Well, if TalkSport are going to sort my flight, Spence, Gareth, I'm there.
Listen, TalkSport.
We'll have a word with Uncle Denny and Uncle Liam about that, but I don't know if they will. If they're listening, if John wants to come and be part of the team,
there's
no problem.
You've heard me vouch.
Finally, before we go to break, and we'll talk about Riakpor Boxer and that brilliant card on June the 15th at Selhurst Park with the world title on the line. Do you see yourself, talking about Saudi, or even Wembley's being talked about in late September, on a 5v5 in the near future? And who would you be up against in the Frank Warren stable?
I definitely see it happening, Gareth.
Yeah.
Who my opponent would be is a mystery to me, because really, with the Frank Warren cruiserweights out there, they're not processing, they're not all coming through the same way. Like, even Ellis Zorro, if he come back again, it'd be a great fight for me, especially where I'm at and he's at. Like, it'd be a great fight. But who knows? Whoever comes through. But one thing I say, I'm not in a cocky way, but I definitely fear no one. So whoever there is, I'll definitely jump at the opportunity.
Well, this weekend coming up, May the 11th, Lauren Price fights for the world welterweight title against Jessica McCaskill in Cardiff. The capital of her home country. We are looking forward to her, the Olympic gold medalist, winning the world title if she can do it on Saturday night. She's a big favourite in the fight. Brilliant fighter, great character. Here's Adam Catterall's interview with her from earlier in the week.
Oh yeah, definitely. Obviously it's a great fight, you know, to headline as well. Going in there with the legit champion. But yeah, to box in Cardiff, that was, you know, one of the main things when I turned over pro, where I said I want to box in Wales, bring big time boxing back to Cardiff, you know, fighting massive fights, get our own support behind me and win multiple world titles. And it all starts on May the 11th. And like I said, I'm overwhelmed really with the support I've received so far in selling tickets and the amount of people, you know, who are coming out and supporting me, and the link up with BBC Wales as well, jumping on board. Honestly, it means the world, yeah.
Well, you saw the pop, obviously, in the aftermath of winning your Olympic gold medal. I know it went crazy back home then. And since you've been a pro, you've been, obviously, decorating the whole of England and various other places with your talent. It's going to be something special, that. When you walk out on May the 11th in front of those fans that have been thirsty for you to be performing in front of them as a pro, that atmosphere is going to be something else.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy, obviously, that we've seen it on me with, you know, when Katie Taylor went back to Ireland, the support she received. And yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be touching, and I'm going to take it all in. I'm going to enjoy it. And then, you know, as soon as I get to the ring, then it's down to business. But yeah, I've obviously enjoyed, you know, the lead up. I'm excited, you know, to be boxing and having my fans come out and support me. There's nothing like us Welsh. We're a small nation, but you know, very proud one when it comes to, you know, the sport and supporting our own. So yeah, I know I'm gonna have she's entering the Dragon's Den, and I know I'm gonna have a few cheers.
Does it help training outside of Wales so you can kind of escape the mayhem? Because I've no doubt your phone's blowing up like mad, people getting involved with tickets and all that type of stuff. You just want to probably concentrate on your camp, don't you, and get ready for the fight. Does it help being away from it a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been up Sheffield now for, this is like 7 years with obviously the GB team, and you know, I'm close with Rob McCracken, and you know, I train alongside, I've been sparring today, you know, the girls who are going to the Olympics who've already qualified. So, yeah, you know, I'm in a great camp. Couldn't have any better, couldn't ask for anything. But yeah, you're right, because sometimes I'll run, you know, on the weekend, or I'll do a run on Monday morning before I come back to camp, and people are tooting me and pulling over for pictures and stuff like that, which is nice.
Yes.
But like you said, obviously you need that kind of switch off to, get away from it. And I think it's just a norm to me now. I've done it for so long, you know, Monday to Friday in Sheffield. It's just my life. And, you know, I live and breathe the sport. So, yeah.
I love the tale as well of your gran. It's, I know that all the friends and family are coming out, but she's not too keen on watching your fight. So I'm led to believe that she's going to maybe, will she watch it from home? Will she stay out of the way?
Yeah, she's, no, she's going to stay out of the way. She said what she'll do, she'll record it and then watch it back, get the result first. This is what she done with the Olympics as well. But I got a feel of like my other family come in, my cousins, my auntie and, you know, my football friends as well, who I've played for Wales with, they come in to support me. So yeah, it's great really. And she's going to be at home minding the dogs. And then, I'll go back to her on Sunday and yeah, celebrate with her. But yeah, I'm going home to her this weekend. And first thing she says to me, like when I walk through the door, where's your washing? So she looks after me in that way. And, you know, Karis is by my side as well. She's been a massive help in dealing with tickets and taking all that pressure off me. So yeah, I've had a good camp.
Listen, it keeps you grounded. When you walk through that front door with them world titles on a Sunday and she's asking for the washing straight away, you know that you're back down to earth, mate. Simple.
I know, yeah. But no, I wouldn't change. I wouldn't have it any other way. But yeah.
I believe you've been getting a little bit of work in as well with Chantel, who's been in the ring with Jessica McCaskill. How was that for you?
Yeah, really good. I sparred Chantel last week because, yeah, it was good to get sparring as well with Chantel because a lot of our team as well were away in Colorado training. So I needed good sparring. And she's moved to Sheffield now. So it just, you know, it made sense. She's only up the road from me, so I'm sure we'll get a few more rounds in again or when she's fighting next. I've said to her, you know, it's great sparring for us both. And yeah, I enjoyed it. So like you said, she's been in there with her as well. So, she beat her quite comfortable. And I've had a good spar and I'm happy and I'm in a good place. So what I'll say on that.
when you look at Jessica, what challenges do you think that she's going to bring you on May the 11th?
I think, you know, she's, you know, you look at every fight, she tries to be the aggressor, quite, you know, unorthodox, if I'm honest. Like she's bent down in weird angles, takes quite a lot of shots as well, I think. But she's quite, she'll probably try and make it messy, try and rough me up, come in, you know, charging in, watch a few of other fights. And that's what she kind of done with, you know, Taylor, Cameron, Sandy. So I know it's obviously she's going to try it with me, but that's down to me, you know, to stick to my boxing and what I do best. I've obviously got Rob McCracken in my corner, you know, and we've got a game plan. And I believe that I put on a top performance and I believe I come out on top.
What I've said this to you in the past, and what I'm looking forward to the most on May the 11th, because of Jessica's style, I've said to you in the past, like when you fought in the previous six fights as a pro, I think people feel what you do early and then think to themselves, I'm just going to shell up here. I'm just going to try my best to get to the end. Whereas I think Jessica will, obviously she's a world champion. She's a two-weight world champion. She's going to fight right to the end, which then will hopefully present opportunities for it to be a cracking fight and you to be able to do what I know that you desire to do.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what makes fights, you know, that's when I'll come out and show my best as well. I think, you know, I've said it, you know, so far I've been quite comfortable. I've won every single round as a pro. And don't get me wrong, I'm not stupid. I know she's going to test areas of me and she's my toughest test yet. But I believe in myself. I believe in, you know, what I've achieved in my career. I believe that, you know, I've been in there with, all right, maybe not as a pro, but as an amateur, I've boxed big girls. I've had Russian, 75-kilo Russians running at me. I've had, you know, all different kinds of styles. I've boxed, you know, to get to the pinnacle of the sport. So from that aspect, from a boxing point of view, you know, I believe I'm a better boxer technically.
Well, on this week's show, I also caught up with a rising star from the Top Rank stable, Bob Arum's outfit in Las Vegas, Xander Zayas, the Puerto Rican. He's only 21. He's already progressing brilliantly in his career, and he's going to headline the Hulu Theatre on June the 8th before Puerto Rican
parade day in New York afterwards. He has to win, he told me, against Patrick Teixeira.
I know, right? It's something that, you know, when the math adds up, it's kind of like history. But, you know, I'm just glad to be in this position. I'm glad to be the main event for the first time in the Puerto Rican Parade, something that I've always dreamed of. And at 21 years old, to headline MSG Theater, it's beautiful. It's something amazing.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. I was there with you last June, of course.
Yes.
What would you... You're 19 fights in. You signed with Top Rank when you were 16. You're only 21 still. It's 5 years into your pro career. What would your... If you were looking back and telling your 16-year-old self now some wisdom that you've learned in the last 5 years, what would it be?
It takes time. Be patient. I remember when I started, you know, my obviously, you know, the guys that knew, my manager, the company, they're like, it's going to take about 5, 6, 7 years to you in the conversation for a world champion or maybe fighting for a world champion. And I'm like, no, I'm doing it 3. So now, you know, reflecting back, it's like, we're going into my 5th year of as a professional. You know, I'm already in that conversation of a world championship fight. But it does take time. You have to be patient. You have to, you know, get the experience under your belt and go little by little, step by step, keep improving.
Is that because when you get to that level that you're fighting, obviously it's another 10 rounder, I think, against Patrick Teixeira. When you get to that level where you're competing for world titles, The improvements that you've got to make are obviously still there, but you need to be ready to stay at world and elite level, or go from world and climb to elite level.
For sure, I feel like you have to be competitive in every fight. Obviously, when you get to that level, there's so many adjustments you have to make in between or in the ring that, you know, you're always improving, you're always getting better, you're always in that competitive stage, and also, you don't fight as often. When you go 10 rounds, when you go 12 rounds, you don't fight as often as people want you to fight or as you want to fight. Because at the end of the day, you know, you gotta let your brain relax a little bit. You gotta let the body breathe a little bit. Obviously, you know, God forbid nothing happens, you know, no damage, no cuts. Then we could be talking in about 2-3 months, but still it's about 2-3 months that, you know, we have to take off. So I feel like, yeah, when you get to that elite level, you have to stay there making those little adjustments, but you also have to understand that the other people is going to try to do the same thing to you. It's going to try to make those adjustments towards whatever you're doing, that is working for you. I feel like that competitive level, that elite level, is a really high level that you got to be really, really patient and really, little by little, just keep climbing up.
We spoke about Puerto Rican Parade Day the last time we spoke. And obviously, I'll say 19 years ago, when Miguel Cotto fought Muhammad Abdullayev, defended his 140-pound crown that day. Because you're the main event, quite a lot's going to be expected of you on, you know, the parade day, which is the Sunday, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
So does it play into your mind that you want to be fully intact at the end of the fight and not have been through a war and have to go to hospital for any reason? And does that play on your mind at all? Because you're one of the major features of the Puerto Rican Day.
I feel like that always plays in my mind. You know, you don't want to get out of a fight with an injury or with a cut. But obviously, I also got to understand that it's boxing. You know, anything could happen. Now that I'm facing a lefty, we can clash heads by accident and you know, a cut opens up. It's something that I don't want. It's something that I don't wish for. But at the end of the day, we gotta make, again, the adjustments in the fight. We gotta, you know, work with what we got during the fight. But no, I feel like I go in there to do my job. Hopefully nothing crazy happens, like a cut or anything like that, so I could be looking good for Sunday. But I'm not worried right now. I'm not worried about Sunday. I'm more worried about June the 8th.
Do you dance on one of the floats?
What was that? What was that?
Will you be dancing afterwards on Sunday?
It depends. It depends. If I don't have a cut, yes. If I do, it might be a little different. I might not look as good as if I would without a cut.
In all seriousness, you mentioned Patrick Teixeira
He's a southpaw. He is tricky. Talk us through the fight. Bell rings. What happens? We know you're... Are you 12 knockouts in 19? 12 stoppages?
Well, I believe 12 or 13.
12. Yeah, you don't even know. Look, your own record. I love that. Talk us through, Teixeira, and what happens when bell rings. Because I know what you're like. You're devastating.
The key for this fight is being patient and working the body. You know, at this age, I'm expecting the best battle to say that, but you know, he's gonna slow down in the middle rounds when we start working that body, when we start attacking that body and then attacking the head. I feel like he's not gonna have the same legs. He's not gonna have the same speed or the same power. So the key is obviously being patient and just working down low to then, you know, drop the hands and come up top.
Does it mean a lot more to you to have a finish, though? Because I know what you're like. You're very powerful. You like to show your worth in every fight. Does the stoppage mean more to you?
Man, in four fights that he has lost, only one person or two person has stopped him. So it'll be good to put that exclamation point. But I don't go in there thinking about it. You know, I just want to do my job. I just want to get the victory and put on a show for the fans. So at the end of the day, if it happens, if I have the opportunity, I'm going to rip his head off. If not, I'm ready to go 10 rounds and I'll box him.
Forgive me if I'm wrong. Are you still with Javier Centeno or not?
Yes, I am still with Javier Centeno. That's my guy.
And talk to me about what Javier brings to you and who else is in the camp and what your sparring's been like. Have you been sparring any world champions this year? Where are you with all of that?
Well, right now I'm having one of my Puerto Rican mates, Brian Polaco. He's my main sparring partner. He went to amateur world champions. Now he's a professional. He's a professional fighter. He's 5-6-0. He's also fighting in June, but not the same fight. He's fighting a little bit later. I don't want to announce it because again, I feel like that's a job he needs to do. But yeah, I feel like Javier brings a lot to the table. Somebody that I trust for my life. Somebody that's been there for me since day one, since I was little. Somebody that I've built a relationship outside of just boxing. You know, I feel like he's like a second dad to me. The other guy that is in my corner is obviously my dad. Somebody that I, again, trust for my life. Somebody that I know is not going to put me in any harm's way. And is always going to look for the best of me, for the best interest of me.
Thank you very much for listening to the Fight Night podcast. Thanks to Spencer Oliver. Always great fun in the studio with Spence. We will be back next week, of course. Big times coming for boxing. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel to watch our shows live. By the way, they are often live on the YouTube channel. Watch our midweek shows. We are the home of boxing. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.